Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This morning we are reading from 5th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 23rd, entitled The Shishumar Planetary Systems, text 4. I'll just read the Sanskrit, because it's in the prose. Kechanaitach jyotir anikam shishumara samstanena bhagavato vasudevasya yoga dharanayam anuvadnayanti. Word by word translation. Kechana. Some yogis or learned scholars of astronomy. Etat, this jyoti anikam, great wheel of planets and stars. Shishumara, samstanena, imagine this wheel to be a shishumar, dolphin. Bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vasudevasya, Lord Vasudev, the son of Vasudev. Krishna, Krishna. Yoga dharanayam, in absorption, in worship. Anuvarnayanti, describe. Translation purported by His Divine Grace S. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This great machine, consisting of the stars and planets, resembles the form of a shishumar, dolphin, in the water. It is sometimes considered an incarnation of Krishna, Vasudev. Great yogis meditate upon Vasudev in this form because it is actually visible. Purport. Transcendentalists, such as yogis, whose minds cannot accommodate the form of the Lord, prefer to visualize something very great, such as the Virat Purusha. Therefore, some yogis contemplate this imaginary shishumar to be swimming in the sky the way a dolphin swims in water. They meditate upon it as the Virat Rupa, the gigantic form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Kechanaitaj jyotiranikam shishumara samastena bhagavato vasudevasya yoga dharanayam anuvar nayanti. This great machine consisting of the stars and planets resembles the form of a shishumar dolphin in the water. It is sometimes considered an incarnation of Krishna, Vasudev. Great yogis meditate upon Vasudev in this form because it is actually visible. So here we have a description of a shishumar planetary system to be in the form that is actually perceivable. And this particular form can be visualized. It is pointed out here that it is imaginary. imaginary in the sense that you don't have all the lines drawn and you don't have any particular exact perception of that particular form, but you can just kind of conceive of its particular shape. You can give one small analogy to illustrate this. Like sometimes all of you know, any newspapers you open or anything, any particular kind of comic for the kids, they have those particular dots, and then you have to draw lines from one, number one to number two to number three to number four and stuff like that. So you can draw a line and you can get some particular shape, some figure. So in a similar way, if you observe the night sky and when you look at a particular stars or planets, you have them placed in such a way that if you would have drawn a line in that particular way, you would have got that particular form which we are discussing here about, and it is Shishumar, the form of a dolphin. But the difference is that, of course, this particular form, once you kind of draw it in your mind, therefore it is imaginary, but of course it exists, then you get that particular shape. It's not only two-dimensional, but it's three-dimensional. It's a three-dimensional form, and it's also moving. It's revolving, as it is described, on its right side. It's very much active. This is this Shishumar planetary systems that are described in this particular 23rd chapter. So that means all the planets that we are basically perceiving are within the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the body of that Shishumar imaginary form. So this imaginary form is just imaginary, as I said, for that sake that you have to visualize the form. You have all the dots. You just have to be tuned in to connect all the dots and have such kind of a vision of a dolphin. And that kind of imaginary form is very suitable for those actually, as described by the Acharyas, who are neophyte. Because neophyte personalities need something visual to relate to. And especially something that is kind of a tangible and something that is not directly related to the absolute reality immediately. Because they cannot relate to the form of Lord Shyamasundara described in the later cantos, like especially 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. So they need something tangible that they can relate to, some kind of a pantheistic process, that means something that relates to the nature, something that they can perceive. So this is how yogis actually visualize the Supreme Personality of Godhead before they realize that from within their hearts. And this is that initial stage that they are recommended to practice. So the Shishumar planetary systems, for them, is usually Mayavadis, you know, that is very acceptable form for the Mayavadis, because that temporary form, it is there. But as we know, it is temporary, because as long as this universe exists, that form will exist. As long as this universe ceases to exist, then this form also won't be present there. This is the only form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that is not eternally present in the Vaikuntha planets or Goloka Vrindavan, because it's temporary, manifested only for the sake of this material structure, material universe. So the yogis visualize this, and then gradually they uplift their consciousness. They fix their mind upon this particular form, and then gradually train the mind so that later on it can be more suitable for the devotional practices. They purify their mind through such particular meditation. And since this particular meditation has been also given here in Srimad Bhagavatam, that we can understand, it is definitely something that is authentic, something that is also part of the spiritual process. But it is the only way we have to understand the beginning of the spiritual realization. It may help someone in that particular neophyte stage to rise and develop attachment, develop understanding, deeper understanding of the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore relationship with Him in itself. So the Shishumar planetary systems, it is described that they are different. It's a little bit complex, a little bit technical description has been given by some acharyas as a commentaries on this particular chapter. They describe it that there are various kinds of planets situated within the body that you have to imagine now, again, as it is stated here, you have to imagine how these planetary systems are situated within this particular body of the Shishumar. Shishumar itself is a aquatic creature, according to Vamshidhar and many other commentators. There is a particular, it is not a dispute, but just different kind of a view of what Shishumar itself it is. As we said, the yogis are supposed to meditate upon it, so most of them conceive it as a dolphin, as a waterly creature. Like Prabhupada, when he would discuss about this particular topic, he pointed out to the devotees in Mayapur, many times you can see in the Ganga, you can see the small river dolphins jumping out any time when you cross from Navadvip to Mayapur. So you can see, so Srila Prabhupada said, this is like a Shishumar, this is Shishumar basically. So this is the form of the Shishumar. So we accept it as such. When I did little research on this particular issue, on this cosmology topic, when I was down south in Bangalore, I met several scholars from Advaita Sampradaya, and their conception of this particular Shishumar is that it is not a dolphin, but they follow Madhvacharya's commentary, which describes that actually it's a scorpion. So there is that little issue of that contend that it's a little bit differing from our Gaudiya Vaishnava point of view. Because Madhvacharya, there is one interesting verse that comes earlier, when it describes the different positions of this particular planetary systems, it describes them to be in the ribs, Vyakri, ribs or the bones of that particular Shishumar conception, universal form of the Lord. But Madhvacharya, that's a little technical, just translates it into Pankti, which means basically the bones, because that is his interpretation. Because the Scorpio doesn't have the ribs or the bones, it has the bones on his body. So this particular planet that is described in those particular regions are therefore referred to Madhvacharya as to be in the scorpion's body. So there is a different vision. So whether you want to meditate on the Shishumar as the form of a dolphin or a scorpio, ultimately doesn't matter. But this is the form which is described here. And yeah, it can be like a game, as I said, if you want to connect all the dots and see actually how it looks, we can come out. Nobody has done it yet because it's not so essential after all. You can have a particular that shape. You can have that form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that is displayed here for this kind of a vision of the yogi, so they can have something tangible and visual to meditate upon. So Shishumar itself, as it is given here, it's not a static form. Of course, because everything rests upon it. The modern materialistic conception of the scientists is that planets float in the air due to the gravitational force. That there is a gravity that larger objects attract smaller objects. That's a Newtonian conception, or the Einstein's conception of the fabric of the time and the space, where a particular heavier object on the space creates some kind of like a whirlpool, but it's not a hole, it's just kind of a curved space, you can imagine, and then attracts the other objects. But that kind of conception is not supported by the Bhagavatam itself. The conception of the planets being in the space is that all the planets are connected to that particular wheel, to that particular chakra of the constellations and the planets from outside and from within inside. So everything rests upon the Lord. And therefore there's no question of falling apart. Because only by Krishna's mercy, all these particular planets are perfectly situated in their position and orbits. And as the Shishumar itself, as that particular body of the dolphin revolves, so simultaneously all the other planets revolve around it. So somebody might be asking then a question, how come then some particular different planets have a different kinds of motions? This is because some planets are situated in the limbs of that particular Shishumar and they have a different motion. So So as the Shishumar revolves around his right thigh, that means clockwise, and we know as that the Dhruva, the pole star, is situated on the peak of its tail, and Dhruva revolves, so simultaneously all the planets related to Dhruva and connected with the gaseous ropes, they also revolve, like I said last time, it's like a chandelier. Some kind of, you can have a vision of the chandelier that revolves. So everything simultaneously revolves around that particular axis on which the Dhruva is the topmost star. So as the Dhruva revolves, being pushed by that movement of the tail of the Shishumar, so simultaneously all the other planets revolve. And when we have a different motion, that means of some particular planet like Mars, then those particular other motions are in the limbs of that Shishumar, of the body of that Shishumar, which move again in a little bit different direction. So this is how the movements of the stars have been described herein, within Srimad Bhagavatam. And also they're all connected from within and from without. They don't have any separate movements and everything is working perfectly. It's perfectly tuned in into that particular cosmological clock. There are not any independent movements. And because the Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, we know it's achyuta, infallible. It's infallible also in a sense that it supports this particular part of the universe. Of course, it supports all the other parts, like Sheshanaga earlier before, it's as a Kurma tortoise on the bottom of the Garbhodaka ocean. So as the Shishumara in this middle planetary system, it supports all the planetary systems in this particular form of Shishumara, in a dolphin. That revolves, and it is described that Shishumar has its on its belly side, it's kind of a twisted. And that twisted form also represents those different planetary systems, nakshatras in particular, that there are 14 in number. So 14 are on the right side, 14 are on the left side. And what is interesting here, that there is a Kala Chakra. Kala Chakra means the all the nakshatras placed in that particular circular space that revolve around the Bhumandala, which is just the plane in the middle of the universe. So as the Kala Chakra revolves and it is placed within the body of the Lord, because of the movements of the Lord, as He moves, so simultaneously sometimes He moves a little bit on left, a little bit on right, and because His belly is twisted, therefore sometimes we see that the sun passes through that particular Kala Chakra. As sun, last time we described how the sun goes, it goes around in a circular direction and simultaneously moves upward and downwards on the other secondary axis. So as the sun is passing through the zodiac, this is how we see and this is how we experience the conception of Uttarayana and Dakshinayana. Sun passing through different 14 stars, so we see on that Kala Chakra of the Shishumar, at one particular point for 6 months, and then another particular point for 6 months downwards, when his body is like on the decline, reclining, so to say, a little bit on the other left-hand side. So this is, it's a little bit technical description, but at least it will help us a little bit to try to understand what that Shishumar is in the body of the Lord, that particular form of the Lord, universal form that can be perceived. Even as I said, by the ordinary vision. So even sometimes if anybody can challenge, because nowadays everybody's into direct perception, people like to challenge, can you see Krishna? Besides of seeing the deity, the form of the Murti, where is Krishna? Where is, as we know also, that universal form, it's a part of a direct perception. We can perceive it, we can see it. This is how it is described, as well as all the other opulences. Then we can see how sun and the moon and Krishna's eyes. We can see how all the other planets just form all the different kinds of limbs of that particular body of a Shishumar. It's an incarnation of the Lord. It's Krishna that can be meditated. And as it is stated later on, if somebody meditates like this, definitely it will purify its existence and develop, devotional sentiments towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anybody who meditates in such a way, it can very quickly and smoothly advance in the spiritual life. So therefore this particular concept of Shishumar has been given so that we can also, it may also help, as I said, especially those please who are on that neophyte devotion platform, so they can have some direct perception if they really have to relate to something as such in particular. So one interesting thing is that Mayavadis also, they accept this particular form. As we know, of course, they accept the Shastras, they accept the whole Vedic culture. But their interpretation is a little bit different. And this is something that we don't agree with. It is interesting that they say that this temporary form of the Lord, which is Shishumar, is real, but they won't accept the personality of Krishna, as Shyam, to be something that is real and tangible. They say this is something that is of the temporary display. So then Srimad Bhagavatam, one interesting verse, it points out that how is that possible that we accept the universal form as something that is real, something that is tangible, something that is substantial, and we don't accept the form of the Lord as Radharas Bihari, as Shyama Sundar, we don't accept that kind of a form. So it doesn't make sense at all. So the very interesting analogy is given, that of the fire. There are three elements. When we perceive fire, like it is a ghee lamp, has been offered earlier, like you see, when we look at a flame, we understand that there are three things that we can perceive, that actually constitute that fire in itself. So that it's a fire, that it's heat and light. So now, that particular energy of the Lord, that is compared by my bodies to be this particular form of the Shishumar, that it's tangible, that it's substantial, it's accepted, and fire it's not accepted, it doesn't make sense. Because fire is the original source of heat and light. So in a similar way, the original form, Mayadam, Jagat Sarvam, Jagat, what is that? Mayadam Tatam, Jagat Avyakta Murti. So in my unmanifested form, this whole universe is pervaded. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 9.4. So the whole universe is pervaded by different energies of the Lord. So if you accept energies as the real, as substantial, and we reject the form in itself, the origin of that particular energetic of the energies, then it's completely false. It doesn't make any sense at all. Because the fire is the one which has a shape, right? Fire is the one which is the form. And energies are not the ones, like heat and light. They don't have a form. You know the heat and light by the fire, by the form in itself. So if somebody would just accept this imaginary form, that means something, energy manifested, different kinds of elements manifested in the form of the Shishumar, and reject the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Shyama Sundar, then it definitely doesn't make any sense. It's completely faulty. So this is how that imaginary form, it is accepted by the Mayavadis, but of course they have a completely different interpretation and understanding of it. Then which is faulty again. So it's interesting that this universe therefore can be practically perceived, and we don't have to speculate about its particular position or its particular function. Everything is given in Srimad Bhagavatam so that we can clearly understand how this particular universal form of the Lord functions and how it actually affects us. This is what is the all basically purpose here given in Srimad Bhagavatam. Now it's interesting that what we see in the universe, when we see these different planetary systems and their different positions, is that they're all having different motions, which is interestingly described by this particular different movements of the limbs or in the body of that Shishumar. So it's all personified. It's not like the modern materialistic conceptions wherein they said after the creation and the Big Bang, the everything dispersed and practically started revolving around itself. And this is how the whole, all different kinds of planets and planetary systems are created. So this is something contradictory towards the logic in itself, which we will explain, and towards the description given here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Like if you can sometimes imagine some kind of wheel, like it sometimes has this merry-go-round, we like to play on it. So if you would take one strong young or elderly person, and you would put a few kids on that merry-go-round. This is something that is compared to that initial bang, the initial explosion basically that fell apart and then formed different kinds of planetary systems. So they said there has been a huge kind of a mass and a huge temperature and everything. Anyway, that's a singularity which again doesn't make sense. It's mathematically indescribable. So if you would have that particular kind of a wheel rotating, then there are different stages that happen. Then those particular children, or if you put yourself, say, just imagine yourself being rotating on that particular wheel, first you would desire to go a little faster. And then if the fast movements have been given, if somebody rotates like real fast, then you come to the point of holding yourself more closer to that particular wheel. And then after you want to kind of inspire that person to push that wheel or the merry-go-round even faster and faster and faster, at some point, you know, what would happen? So they start screaming and yelling and wanted to come down because of real super fast movements. And when it becomes real fast, then as no one can hold it anymore, just let it go, and it would just end in the basically same particular movement. It would fall down somewhere nearby, depending on that particular speed, depending on that particular force. So this is something that is second law of thermodynamics describing the conservation of energy, and actually conservation of energy related to the angular velocity, which points out that once you have particular object spinning in a particular direction, then any other object falling apart from that particular object is also going to spin in the same direction. But of course, even with a greater speed, because the movement in interior and external, compared to the exterior, it's far greater in exterior level than within the interior level. But that means the plant, you know, like they, as they say, everything exploded and everything was created by that particular clockwise movement, then that should be the case that we actually observe, but it is not. So because everything revolves clockwise, then we should see that all the planets, that all the moons and everything should be revolving clockwise as well in the universe. But that's not the case. Because out of 91 moons, 8 of them, they revolve backward. They don't revolve clockwise. And we know that Jupiter, Neptune and Uranus planets, that basically they have moons which revolve in the both ways. Some are revolving backward and some are revolving clockwise. And we know the Mars, as we said, like we gave the Vedic explanation of it. Mars in itself, it revolves in completely different, it has a crooked motion. That's very well known in Jyotish. So how can science, how can theory of evolution actually explain such kind of different movements? By the theory of the Big Bang. It's impossible. Because according to the law of conservation of energy, that angular motion, second law of thermodynamics, everything should revolve clockwise. But it doesn't. So they're trapped. They can't explain it. But our explanation, of course, as you say, it is more personal. It is Shishumar. It is the universal form of the Lord that basically holds everything and keeps everything in the motion. Of course, earlier has been said that all the planetary system, everything revolves according to the particular karmas, according to the particular activities. And this is how the Lord actually basically executes those particular forces upon those particular planets and those particular demigods that live upon it. But it is very systematic. It is the most wonderful system, which is so precise. So it's not something that, you know, happened by the chance and actually doesn't practically respond to any common sense, any logic as such. So this universal form is one of the forms, as we said, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which holds those different planets. It's interesting from the material point of view. They say, again, that different, there are so many, sometimes they observe, but they call it, it's the supernova, or something that is basically related to creation of the new stars. That's what they call it, but actually it's not a fact. No one from the scientific field actually practically have that direct observation, that pratyaksha of the creation of the formation of the new stars. What they see sometimes, it's what they call the explosion of the stars, or destruction of the stars. So the problem here is that those particular stars, in order to form, like in the textbooks you will find that new star is formed from particular amount of gas and dust. But it's again something that is very much contradictory to the physical laws itself. Because if you combine a lot of gas together and dust together, it's impossible. It will require enormous amount of pressure. And actually it boils up the temperature, it boils up the pressure, and all this dust and all these gases are basically falling back apart. So it's impossible. Physically it's impossible to create something like this. So it's practically a contradictory statement. Actually it's a false statement that we have been taught that how actually stars have been formated. That's a Boyle's gas law. It's contradictory, completely contradictory to the Boyle gas law. Because if you put the gas and the dust together and you try to pressure them, it's impossible. It just doesn't work. It's impossible to create anything substantial out of it. So all the planets actually we know have been created as described in Bhagavatam by Lord Brahma in one particular instance. And interesting enough is that in Matsya Purana we'll find information, exact number, how many stars are there in the universe. Exact number. So it's not that we have to speculate, maybe are that many, maybe are this many. The exact number has been given. And all the stars actually that we can perceive from our earthly point of view are up till the level of the Dhruva Loka. Nothing beyond that. That's all what we can perceive. And all of them are there, just between that region. Beyond Jana Loka, Maha Loka, Tapa Loka, Satya Loka, we have no perception. We can't perceive any of this. So when they say that they are seeing different distant galaxies and billions away, different things, it's all false. It's all basically wrong perception. Because again, I'm going to be a little technical. It's a technical verse that you're trying to describe a little bit here. The point is that scientists, their methodology of measuring distances, it's very inaccurate. They try to measure it through the light years. Light year is a distance, it's not a time, that's one thing. And second, it has been proven by so many scientists themselves that actually light speed is not a constant. Under different circumstances, it yields a different result. So when they try to measure light years and distances, it is completely inaccurate. Because they have different methodologies again. Like one of them is just basic trigonometry for the, so to say, closer stars. If you know one angle, for example, and the distance between two particular objects, then you can figure out the distance, or you can figure out that triangle in between. That's just simple trigonometry, sine, cosine, and tangent. It's a very simple trigonometry. But that becomes a very difficult, it becomes a large problem if you have something very, very distant. Like, for example, if Earth in itself, like when you measure the distance of Earth to the Sun, which we know it's 93 million miles, then what you have to do, then usually what they would do, they would, like here in India, if you set up one particular telescope, and you may set it up across the globe, say in the US, and then you point out those two telescopes towards the Sun, and you have this like 8,000 mile distance, and then you choose that particular angle towards the Sun, then by that trigonometrical calculation you can figure out the distance of the Sun. So in one sense, okay, we can grant them this because it's not such a vast distance. But even that becomes very difficult. This would be like if you imagine two persons, or actually okay, the way they measure it is that they take the heliocentric system, which again has a huge different kind of faulty assumptions carried by that particular conception of the heliocentric system. That's a whole different discussion now again, but important one, that this difference between heliocentric and geocentric system practically is not there at all. Mathematically both are describable, it doesn't make a big difference. And big scientists like even Einstein, Mach, Max Bohr, so many of them, they said there is no difference between heliocentric or geocentric system. But there is a big problem with heliocentric system in terms of calculating the distances. When we take the geocentric system described here in Bhagavatam, then we get different kinds of distances which will be mentioned in later verses. What is the different distance between this particular positions of the planets. But once you take the heliocentric system, everything actually multiplies manifold. So therefore, their idea and conception of the distances is much greater. So the point here is also, as I said, is that how they measure the distance from the Earth to the Sun is that Earth again revolves, it has its, according to heliocentric system, revolves around the Sun, and then they take, say like in January and maybe in June, they take 6 months of distance at which particular point, so they will use that particular point to say have one telescope and another one in particular 6 months afterwards when the Earth is on completely different side of the Sun. So if you can maybe imagine the Sun is in the middle and you have a orbit around it, so that from two different points, so that increases, if you measure from the point of Earth, you have just the distances, you have 8 minutes, light travels 8 minutes from the Sun to the Earth. But if you increase that particular distance, then it's about 16 minutes. If you use that particular calculation from the one side of the orbit to another side of the orbit, and you use that particular trigonometric calculation, then you get, then you have a 16 minutes difference of the 16 light minutes, and then you can calculate the distance from the, of Earth towards the Sun. So that's the distance of 93 million miles. But if you try to understand it a little bit more practically, so this would be like if you take 16 inches, you put two telescopes, two persons here, so that's like 16 inches difference, and then you have to measure 8.3 miles. The distance. And of course, nobody knows what the distance is, you have to figure it out yourself. Nobody knows what the given distance actually is. You, all you know is your position and the distance between those two telescopes and a particular angle. That's all. So this is how they calculate the distance from Earth to the Sun. So now if you multiply this to one light year, what they call it is one light year, then you would have, again, 16, that's the furthest that the Earth's orbit, so to say, according to heliocentric system goes. Then you have the 16 inches. And if you want to calculate like 100 light years distance, and they're speaking of billions and billions of light years, then you, it would be like if you put somebody in our Brahmacharya ashram kitchen on the roof, on the water tank, you put two persons with two telescopes, and the distance between them would be like 16 inches. And they have to calculate something that is 830 miles in distance. So just imagine how very tiny, tiny point, even the earlier one, you know, if you want to go 8.3 miles and 16, you know, just inches difference between the telescope, you know how tiny, tiny point that is. It practically doesn't make sense. So if you want to calculate 16 inches difference and you point out, say, towards Vrindavan and Delhi, that would be like 830 miles, right, from Mumbai, something like this, somewhere there. So you have to figure out the distance. But just based on your angle of telescope and just based on the distance of 16 inches. So how is that possible? How can you calculate? So even granted for the scientists, let's say even they can do it. This is only, it comes only up to, you know, as they say, 100 light years. And they're speaking of millions and they're speaking of billions and billions light years. So how is it possible? It's practically impossible. How they can figure out what the real distance is. That's one thing. So it's a very faulty, it's very assuming position of the particular distances of the stars. And another methodology that they use is the Doppler's effect, the sound. To give you an example of the train, the pitch of the train in the distance, it's a very like prolonged, and it becomes compressed as it comes by, and the high pitch just blasts at a point when it kind of reaches your particular point when you're standing. So in a similar way, they calculate the distances according to the colors of the stars or particular spectrum on which they place particular stars. They calculate according to particular burning of the star, and then on that spectrum, when that burning represented by a particular black line, is moved towards the blue, then the star should be kind of closer, and then it shifts towards the red, then it's supposed to be that red shift is supposed to be very, very far away. But also that particular methodology is based again upon this particular trigonometric calculation. So this is how everything actually, all the imperfection is practically multiplied more and more. Just to give you an idea, like, and you see, one important thing is when they calculate a difference, it's based on the parallax effect. Parallax effect, just a little exercise just to wake everybody up, because I know it's a little technical, is like when you point the finger into some object. Okay, can you point finger, say, maybe at the our Tulsi plant? Everybody, just point the finger. Can everybody point the finger? And just close your left eye. Close your left eye. And then you keep your finger point, and now you open your left eye, close your right eye. Try to do that exercise. You see how your finger moves? It's not straight. So what they do, then they use the parallax system wherein they, you know, like you have two lines which then are crossed at particular points, so that's that parallax. So they take their middle ground. So that itself is pretty much imperfect. I mean, you can calculate to some shorter distances. When it goes, increases to the larger, it's practically impossible to figure it out. It's a very, very faulty system. And as I said, what to say of having such a small distance and trying to calculate on a large, large distance? They're huge assumptions. So they can't figure out the real distance of the stars. But as I said, here in Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the most wonderful system of the distances given by the higher authorities. So we don't have to break our heads over it. We just have the direct descending information about which particular point, any particular planet is given, and which at any particular time where that particular planet can be found. So this is the glory, this is the most wonderful thing about Srimad Bhagavatam, that it gives us such amazing information. That many scientists are still baffling and they're, you know, they're very, very confused about. So this is how this planetary Shishumar system has been described, and the planetary positions in such a most wonderful way that, as I said, anybody can perceive it. And in terms of the different forms of the Lord, like this universal form, just for us to be now a little more practical, it's not something that it's really desirable by the devotees. As I said, it's usually for those who are in the neophyte stage, who try to perceive, have some direct perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so they can have it in that particular form. So here there's one interesting word in the there's a yantra in the Bhagavatam, Jyoti Anika, which refers Jyoti, like a Jyoti Chakra, which means all these different nakshatras or different rashis. This is that Jyoti Chakra, as I said, it is situated within the middle part of that Shishumara planetary system. So this is something that yogis, when they meditate, the whole purpose of meditation is that they elevate their energy, kundalini, towards higher and higher chakras, which correspond to different planetary systems. Which is very interesting. You elevate your consciousness, you elevate your energy towards higher levels of your being. So in a similar way, we know according to karma, as we act according to different karma, we are placed to different planetary systems. The better karma, more pious, the more consciousness is higher, you're the higher planetary systems. So that's why yogis, they do, because we know that our body also corresponds to the whole universe. It's a small universe compared to the larger universe, basically they're practically identical. So the yogi elevates his consciousness and energy from lower chakras up to the higher. So in a similar way, someone can advance from our particular planetary systems up to the higher and ultimately shoot out from the Brahma Rantra Chakra or the Brahma Loka, completely out of this universe altogether. So this is how yogis are meditating and using this Shishumar form as well as the tool for elevating their consciousness, for elevating their karma also, pious activities, depends on which level those yogis are. But this is something that is not for the devotees themselves. It's not recommended for the bhaktas, neither they're interested in it. As we know, when Arjuna saw the universal form, he was not very much happy about it. He was very much perturbed, very much disturbed. He wanted to have the relationship with the Shyam, two-handed, most beautiful and chanting form of the Lord. So one problem is there that, anyway, that's a, I'll just summarize a little bit. Many times people say, it is basically described that this is the testing form for those who claim to be Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not that somebody may say, that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you have to become my devotee in order to have a vision of the universal form. Srila Prabhupada doesn't agree with that. You know, they would say, if you want to see the universal form, you have to become my devotee. You have to surrender like Arjuna did. But Prabhupada completely smashes that particular point, because he said, you have to be able, you have to be capable, even if I'm not your devotee, to present this universal form of the Lord. That's why this universal form altogether has been shown to Arjuna, to testify, to solidify that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one who can show, present this universal form of the Lord. Because we know that universal form was not only shown to Arjuna, it was shown to Duryodhana, who wasn't a devotee of the Lord at all. In the Kuru assembly, when Krishna came to negotiate for the peaceful agreement before the Kurukshetra war. So that's not the criteria. It's interesting that this universal form is that, it, according to Madhvacharya, has been shown 5 times. Anybody knows to whom Lord Krishna showed the universal form? So in 5 instances it has been done. We mentioned 2, Arjuna and Duryodhana. So 3 more. Huh? What?
Vaman?
That's a different conception. You may say so, but it's not included in that particular universal form. Right. Huh? Yashoda? Yes, Mother Yashoda? And then 2 more. Huh? I said Duryodhana, that you said. Okay, because time is running, I'll just quickly conclude. Who? Advaitacharya. Well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed it to Srivas Thakur in his house. That's a little bit different, but we speak about Krishna now. Not Bhishma. Arjun, we said. Akrura, yes. Akrura is one of them, and the last one is Sage Uttanka. Sage Uttanka described in Mahabharata. There's a whole lila how Sage Uttanka saw the universal form. Because he was praying to Krishna to appear, and he desired actually the... That's an interesting story. He desired the heavenly nectar, rasa. But then Krishna made a little joke, so he sent Indra in the form of Chandala, and he found himself in the desert, and he desired that particular rasa, soma rasa. But Indra as a Chandala offered him this, but Uttanka didn't know, so Indra said, you can drink my urine. And of course the sage was, you know, completely disgusted. He just couldn't relate to anything as such. He couldn't understand that this is actually Indra in disguise. So he cursed Krishna. Actually, the curse was destruction of the Yadu dynasty. That is another source from that particular curse. But later on, Krishna showed him his universal form and explained actually who the Indra is, and that the sage was specified, and he kind of gave some blessings to Krishna as well. So that's the 5th instance. So this universal form, it's not something that's very much desired by the devotees, because there is no that sweetness, there is no that relationship. So then the whole discussion may be pointed out here also in terms of acharyas pointing how come that Arjuna received the divine vision, and that divine vision must be something superior from the vision that Arjuna had while directly perceiving Lord Krishna. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur interestingly said that actually it's not as such. Because once you're tasting and relishing something sweet and wonderful, then you won't be interested in any other tastes. You won't be able to taste anything else. So once you have a sham in front of you, you won't be interested in anything else. So it's not that this kind of vision or that kind of perception is greater than the one that Arjuna at a particular point had in relationship to Lord Shyamasundar. So here we have seen that this particular, as we said, description of Shishumar, it's helpful for the yogis to elevate their mind, to elevate their consciousness, and it's a tool that can be utilized for the spiritual advancement as well. But of course, for those who have a greater and better process, faster process, like we said, it's a lift compared to the staircase, devotees therefore are not so much interested, but at least, as mentioned here, we can understand that this process is authentic. And it's helpful for those, at least, who have initially some kind of impersonal conceptions of the Lord. So they can utilize that particular attraction towards the visualization of this particular Shishumar planetary systems and elevate their consciousness and advance in the spiritual life. Okay, Hare Krishna. So we'll stop here, because time is out. Any questions or comments? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you very much. It was a good explanation about the whole Sishumar planetary system. So my question was like, we go further ahead little bit in this Bhagavatam. It explained different planets are situated at the different limbs of this Sishumara planetary systems. So it describes Mars, Jupiter and Sun at different parts of this Sishumara. So, but we, you explained like, you know, this planetary system is like different dots, and when we connect one dot to another dot, the whole form is like Shishumar, and we have to imagine that form. But we also see that all these different planets have different periods of their motion around this Mount Meru. Like, you know, Sun has its own period, and different planets have their different periods. So how to accommodate that all these different planets have different periods of their motion around the Sun, and still they form the different parts of the Sishumar planet, Sishumar, form of Sishumar.
Yeah, that was described in the previous verse. Like it says three different, let me just remind myself, it's in previous verse there are three different motions of the sun. If you look at the verse, at the text 3, one second. Text 3. It's one particular word. Okay. Like that example of the bull rotating around the pivotal point. He said the bull is sometimes closer to the points, another time in the middle, another time on the outside. Like that particular point described by the Acharyas, it points out that the sun is at a different particular distance, but it said it has its own particular, like if you look like horizontal, it has its particular, it's not vertical, it's horizontal. It has its particular different motions. So Jiva Goswami said sometimes it refers to the morning, afternoon, and the night. And another Acharya has explained, I think it's Viraghavacharya or Shridhaswami, they said that refers to different positions of the sun again in relationship like that Uttarayan, Dakshinayan, and in the middle. But this is still on that horizontal line. So these motions are there, and as we explained in this particular, related to this particular today's verse, is that the Shishumar moves itself. You know, it's like kind of, Shishumar moves its limbs. This is where different planets are. It also revolves around, of course it's toppled upside down, the nose is down, the head is down, the tail is up. So it revolves, so it's like a water, like as I said, Prabhupada said, the dolphin kind of, you know, jumps, but it's in that stationary position, but it revolves and simultaneously it moves its body also. It's coiled. Actually, in the part of the belly, it's coiled. So that movement is also there. That's what I said, six nights. That's how you have Uttarayana and Dakshinayana, 14 sides on the right side and 14 on the left, 28 nakshatras. And then, of course, the Milky Way is on the belly, you know, the whole stars representing the Milky Way are there. And so Shishumara moves like this and simultaneously revolves and moves its limbs. So that's how you get the different motions. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.